Morning, today's daf in Me'ilas daf Yud. We are starting towards the bottom of the Amud, five lines from the bottom on Testament Beis. We're starting with the words Haguf Akasha. There is an inherent steer within the Braisa. Obviously making reference to a Braisa that we learned yesterday. The Braisa we just got done learning yesterday. The Braisa was brought in to resolve... Right, fight the crowds to get here this morning, huh? I also... It's more schar, more for the Limud HaTorah. The Braisa yesterday... The Braisa yesterday was brought in as a support for Rav. So remember yesterday we had a discussion slash debate that if I get Hana from the meat of Kachi Kachim and it's before Zrikas Adam or the Murim of Kachim Kalam after Zrikas Adam, so obviously you violated me. Obviously you have to make a restitution. And good, you're making restitution. Now you're making restitution towards carbon. That part's clear. But what exactly, what kind of carbon are you bringing back as your restitution? So machlokes between Rav and Levi. Rav takes the position in a dava that you put in the pushka. Generally speaking, whenever there's any kind of surplus money, so you put in a dava. So here as well, it's granted it's not a surplus money. It's compensation. It's restitution for the hana that you received. But okay, but it's the same basic idea. It goes to the nadava, it goes to the pushka. The pushka, as we've said time and again, that money, those funds are going to be used to buy carbon olas in the slow time, in the slow season, in the Beis HaMikdash, what's described as Keitz HaMizbeach. That is the opinion of Rav. Levi, on the other hand, disagrees. Levi says that you have to buy Keteris with that money. Now, Levi's position is bolstered by the fact that, look, if I buy a standard carbon ola with that money, we know that the majority of that money is going to be burnt on the Mizbeach. But there is a small percentage of that money that's going to go towards the Kohanim. So Levi, what Levi's objecting to is this idea that if I'm going to make restitution towards the carbon, it should be kula l'mizbech. The whole thing has to go into the mizbech, i.e. it has to be kataris, which is kula mizbech, but not ola, which is only mostly to the mizbech. And obviously Rav disagrees with that point. To that end, we then quoted a braisa yesterday, and the braisa was fully supportive of Rav's position, and that's why we quoted the braisa. And as long as we quoted the braisa, now the Gemara says, let's pick at the braisa just a little bit. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go back and reread the braisa again. So actually, I'll start, like, let's say, 12 lines from the bottom of the Amud with the words Tanya Kavas Eder Rav. The Gemara is quoting the braisa supporting Rav. And now after having seen the braisa, then we can easily look and see what exists as a contradiction within the braisa. The braisa starts off Tanya Kavas Eder Rav. Anenemi Dmei Chatzos Umidmei Asham. If a person gets benefit from the money of Chatzos, the money of Asham, meaning a person owes a carbon chatzos, he now puts money aside. He's got a little piggy bank, and he puts money in the piggy bank, making a collection for his carbon chatzos. So that money, every time it's put in there, is now designated as chatzos money, which has the status of chatzos. That money is now demei chatzos. And we could say the same thing regarding an asham as well. Either case, the point is going to be the same. And then, one morning, you wake up early, a little groggy, and by accident, you take money out of this pushka for your lunch. And now you went ahead, you bought yourself some lunch, and then when you got home, you realized, that was chatas money. I was just moa by chatas money. It's not a big deal. What you do is you go back to your pocket, you take out more money, and you make full restitution of that which you took. Yes, chomish, yes, karban asham, okay, et cetera, et cetera. The point that Bryce is making is the following, is that if, what do I do with this money? So what I do with this money is I put it right back into the piggy bank. What am I going to do with this money? I'm just going to buy a larger carbon chatas. That's all. So, hanem midmei chatas, midmei asham ashlo karva chatas, so yosef yavi chataso, vashlo karva shamo yosef yavi ashamo. So the Braisa tells us that what you're just going to do in terms of the compensatory money is put it back in the pushka in order so that you can go ahead and purchase a larger carbon chatas. Karav chatas, so now, let's say the following. You took some money out of the pushka to buy yourself lunch, okay? And then you weren't aware of your mistake. You went ahead and you purchased your carbon chatas. You know, the piggy bank was just a little bit lighter, but you didn't notice. You went ahead and you purchased the carbon chatas. You offered your carbon chatas. Now what? Now, what's going to happen is that your compensation money is now residual chatas, moser chatas. What do you do with that money? So that's what the braisa says. Yechuli amamelch has to be destroyed. Kfar karav ashamo, you flew in the dava. Now, if it's an asham, so that money is going to go to nadava. And as we went over yesterday, we say this time and again throughout the discussions of chataus amesas and asham mesa. or Asher Meis, I guess you would say, and that is that whatever is true by a Chatzis in terms of that which is consigned for death, by an Asham it is going to be Yiplu Nadava. The funds of the Asham are going to be going to Nadava. In any event, what we just learned in the first half of the Braisa is that if I have any residual carbon Chatzis, the money, the funds just simply go towards the carbon Chatzis, if possible, and if not, it's going to be destroyed. Now the Braisa goes on. If I get benefit from kasha kadashim before zrikas adam v'imur kasha kal malachas zrikas damim, mashenena yipul nadava, whatever you get benefit from goes to nadava. It's this very part of the braisa which we already pointed out yesterday, which is going to be supportive of Rav because it's exactly what Rav said. And kol karbanos mizbech lemizbech kol karbanos kachi bedekabayis lebedekabayis. The carbon of the mizbech goes towards the mizbech. The carbon kachi bedekabayis goes to bedekabayis. Yes. Meaning whoever you stole from, the restitution goes towards that particular section. If I stole from carbon, my restitution has to go towards carbon. If I stole from Bedek HaBayis, the restitution has to go to Bedek HaBayis. Carbon and Sibor and Dove and Sibor. And if it's a carbon Sibor, my restitution has to go back to carbon Sibor. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Braisa, Hagufa Kasha. Now, after having gone through the entire Braisa, again, there's only one line of the Braisa that, as far as we were concerned, we were interested in being supportive of Rav. But now that we quoted the Braisa, the Gemara is going to point out there is an inherent contradiction within the Braisa. Because the Braisa says, Achelo karva chataso yosi v'yavi chataso, mishakir v'chataso yechuli yama melech, that prior to the carbon chatas, prior to you offering the carbon chatas, what you will be doing is you will just simply be adding and making a contribution towards your carbon chatas. If after the carbon chatas is brought, so then yechuli yama melech, it has to be destroyed. That's what we learned in the first half of the Braisa. Then v'katani, then keep reading in the Braisa, kol karbonos mizbech l'mizbech. If it's carbon mizbech, so what do you do with that money? Just put it right back to mizbech, right? It gets reinvested towards mizbech. Wait one second. That's not always true. Because if it's a chatos money, and your chatos offering was already offered, it doesn't get reinvested back into chatos, but rather, it has to be destroyed. So, v'loshan de'ichbar ba'alim, v'loshan ha'echad alo ichbar. And making no distinction at the end of the braisa, whether it was before kapara, whether it was after kapara, it always gets reinvested back to carbon. Okay, so what we have now is a contradiction between the first and second half of the braisa. So the Gemara's response, it's not elegant, but it works. Reisha Rabbi Shimon, he, damar kol chatao shekipur ba'ala, tamus. And seifa, whereas we're now in the top of daf yud, skip the parentheses, seifa rabbanan. So the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa is that it just simply is reflecting two different viewpoints. The first half of the Mishnah reflects the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. What does Rabbi Shimon say? Rabbi Shimon says that if I lost my original carbon chatas and I replaced it with another chatas, and even if I found my original carbon chatas, the lost chatas, if not offered, is consigned for death, meaning that falls under the category of chatas namesa. And that's not just true regarding the animal, it's also true regarding the money as well. If the money was used and there's any kind of surplus money, so that money also has to be destroyed. So the first half of the Mishnah is really reflecting the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. However, according to the Chachamim limit the scope of Chatash Nizkapru Ba'acheres. The scope of Chatash Nizkapru Ba'acheres, according to the Chachamim, is only in the circumstance where I lost my original, I replaced it, I offer the replacement, and then and only then do I find my original. Under those limited circumstances do we say that it's consigned for death. However, if I find the money before, if I either find the animal or the money before I bring the replacement, that is not a chatas hamesa, it's not consigned for death, you can go ahead and reapply that towards another carbon chatas. That is the opinion of the Chachamim. And so therefore, the second half of the braisa is simply reflecting the viewpoint of the Chachamim, not Rabbi Shimon. So to put it in just, and try to put it in other terms, the stira, the contradiction between the first and second half of the braisa is really nothing more than just simply a reflection of the various viewpoints of Rabbi Shimon, the Chachamim, vis-a-vis the scope of a chatas hamesa.
But it's not yours to reassign.
It
doesn't belong to you.
It's chatas money. It's... Right? In other words, it's yours to make restitution. What are you going to do with it? I'll just repackage your question. What are you going to do with it if, let's say, you already offered your carbon chatas, and you no longer have any other, you have no other chait on the docket, and what are you going to do with that money? Okay,
somebody else's chatas?
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. Unsure about that. This answer that the Gemara just provided, the Gemara points out that there's corroboration on this answer. Amar Rav Gvir de Beik Sila Rav Ashi. Hachi Amar Abai, Abai said the very same thing. Reisha Rabbi Shimon v'sefer Rabbanan. Meaning the question that everyone asks in this Brisa was the same question. And Abai gives the same answer. That it's just simply reflective of two different viewpoints. Amar Rava. Continuing now in the Gemara, we're on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. Hakam Odim Shim Nena Mi Bisar Kasha Kadashim Shinitma. Rava now also is going to be limiting the scope of mi'ila as it relates to a karban. Now, to be specific, if you get hana from the meat of kashya kadashim, that becomes tame. Now, the meat of kashya kadashim that becomes tame. So, what does that mean? It's disqualified, right? It's tame. So that means that it is not to be offered on the mizbeach, and it's supposed to be disposed of. Now, disposal here happens to mean that you're going to burn it in the Azara, but let's be clear, not on the Mizbeach, meaning it's disqualified. So there are certain areas to the side where it is designated areas of disposal. In this case, it is to be burned off to the side in the Azara. The psul occurred in Kodesh, therefore, its disposal is going to occur in Kodesh. However, it's no longer a karban, it's tamei. And so since it's no longer a karban, if you get benefit from it, you're not violating mi'ila because you are not benefiting from a karban. It is something which is to be disposed of. Similarly, if let's say it's the imurim of kashim kalam after zrika, so as we've said now time and again throughout this perek, you are going to be subject to the mi'ila prohibition because once it is imurim of ishlamim after zrika, so now it's kashi Hashem. And therefore, it's subject to mi'ila. However, if after having gone on to the mizbeach, and now once it catches fire on the mizbeach, so then it is no longer subject to mi'ila. Now, Pshita, the Gemara says, now that is obvious, isn't it? My kamafsid. Meaning, because these are now, in the first case, it is disqualified. In the second case, the mitzvah has already been performed. So then what's the hefsid? So, ma'udetema basar kachi karashan shenit ma'islehu mitzvah sreifa lekohanim. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the Havamina is. We're just saying a Havamina. But at least as a Havamina, let's understand. When it comes to the Basar of Kachi Kadashim that becomes Tamei, it's true it's disqualified. It's true it's no longer an acceptable carbon. But it's also true that it's going to require Srefa B'Kodesh. You have to burn it in the Azara. One could have argued that has the status of a mitzvah. As such, we're not yet done with it. That's the argument you can make, right? The Gemara's terminology, mitzvah, right? Islay mitzvah sreifa lekohanim. The kohanim still have to burn it. And so therefore you could think, as a havamina, that since we're not done yet with the mitzvah, still eligible for me'ila. That's one havamina. What about the imurim of kashim kalim? The Gemara says, I'll tell you the havamina. Imurim kashim kalim ika mitzvah lafuche bitzinura. Yes, it's true that it's on the mizbeach and now it's burning and now mitzvah's done. On the other hand, there needs to be kohanim up there turning it over, making sure that all of it gets burnt. And so since there is this idea of hifuch b'tzinora, that there's still this, flip it over, make sure it all gets burnt, so therefore we are not yet done with the mitzvah, still subject to mi'ila, kamash malan delo. It's coming to teach us that it's not the case. Now, you learned today's daf, you learned yesterday's daf, and hopefully you're a little bit confused. Hopefully. Actually, no, I hope you're not confused. But Rashi over here makes the following observation. Do you know that in yesterday's daf we talked about when is the mi'ila going to be finished with a karban? When it's reduced to ash. And even then, by the way, that's not when it's done yet. When is the mi'ila period going to be over? When it's reduced to ash and Truma Sedeshin is taken off. And even then, there's another machlokas that we learned in yesterday's daf, that maybe I need all of it to be removed off the Mizbeach in order for Mi'ila to be done. So, in yesterday's daf, we said that when is Mi'ila going to be over by a karban? When it's on the Mizbeach, and finally reduced to ash, and at least the Trumas Hadeshen is removed. In today's daf, that was yesterday's daf. In today's daf, we said that when is Mi'ila going to be over? Mi'ila is going to be over when you put it on the Mizbeach and it starts taking fire. Okay, so right and what happened between today's daf and yesterday's daf? Rashi raises this as an issue. Rashi writes,
"It's going to be
ash." Well, that's true, but yesterday we said that that's not enough. Yesterday's daf we said it has to actually be reduced to ash, and not only that, it has to be removed from the mizbeach And then and only then is Me'ilah going to be lifted. That's what we said in the bottom of the Amud Aleph of yesterday's daf. Right? That's the Machlokus of Rav and Rav Yochanan. All right? Hanena me'afar tapuch sha'agabe mizbech. Rav amar ein mo'olam bo. Rav Yochanan amar mo'olam bo. According to Rav Yochanan, even as an ash pile on the mizbech, it's still subject to Me'ilah. And in today's daf, we're saying that you put it on the fire, and that's enough. And now the Me'ilah is lifted. Rashi writes to this, and he says, he's bothered by this, and he writes, Hasam la'el mairi, if you want to follow me in the Rashi, it's the first wide line, Hasam mairi, be'efer ola, uvi imure kachi kadashim dechamira. So Rashi makes the following distinction. Yesterday we were talking about Kachi Kadashim, and by Kachi Kadashim, it's subject to Me'ilah even after it's been removed, reduced to ash, as long as it's still on the Mizbech, because it's Kachi Kadashim. It has a higher level of sanctity, and therefore its Me'ilah period is going to continue even after it has been reduced to ash. Mishum hachi ma'alam bahem ashiyat l'beis adeshen. And Me'ilah will continue until it is actually going to be taken out of the Azara. However, Aval Imurim Kachim Kalim in Ardaf, today we're talking about the Imurim of Kachim Kalim. Delocha Mirikulehai, it's not that strict. Mishum Hachi, Hanan Emehem Lacher Sha'alu Pater. That means that for the Imurim, the moment they go up onto the Mizbech and catch fire, so that's when the Isra Me'ilah goes away. Okay, I know how to translate the words of the Rashi. Do I fully understand it? So I'm admitting I don't fully understand it. Meaning, what difference does it make? Meaning, if it needs to be burnt, so ostensibly it should be the same guidelines guiding the two of them. If by Kachi Kadashim the Me'ilah continues even to the point where it's reduced to ash, I would have said the same thing by Imurim as well. On the other hand, I appreciate the fact that you have to address the fact that yesterday's daf and today's daf are not in agreement. You have to give an answer. On a superficial level, I understand the answer, but I'm not really claiming I understand the answer. Yes.
It's a very small window.
Yes, right. Making excellent observation. Right, the window now of Me'ilah has shrunk even further. Right. In other words, it only starts at Zrika, and it's going to end the moment it makes contact with the top of the Mizbech. Right? Excellent. Amar Rava, back to our Gemara. Had Amar Kvar Karva Chatas Yechuli Amar Melech Hani Milidis Yadelei Kame Kapara Valach Kapar Yipul Nadava. Rava makes one more modification, one more additional point to our chatas discussion. Again, you have a piggy bank for your chatas carbon that you need to offer, and every day you make a contribution to it and you put money into it, and then one day you take your lunch money out from there by accident and you buy yourself lunch from it, and now what? So we already learned earlier this morning that as long as the money's still there, just make your restitution back to the piggy bank and buy a larger carbon. And if the money was already spent on a carbon chatas, so according to the first part of the Braisa, which is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, Yechul Yam HaMelech, you have to destroy that surplus money. Rav is making one more point, and that's the following. That let's say that you bought your lunch money with that chatas money, and you had a nice lunch, and you really enjoyed it, and now you went back to the piggy bank, and at this point in time, you were totally unaware of what you did. And you went ahead and you bought your carbon chatas. And you offered your carbon chatas. And now you got home, and now the realization, oh no, of that money that I went to and bought my carbon chatas and already offered my carbon chatas, there was some of that money that I took for my lunch. And I ate it. And it was delicious. But now I'm in violation of Me'ilah. Now I'm in violation of Me'ilah. But at this point in time now, the carbon is already gone. So if I'm now going to set aside money for a surplus carbon chatas, well, it's not really a surplus carbon chatas. The carbon chatas now has been offered. It's right. Mitzvah has been performed. So what Rav says that under these circumstances, everyone's in agreement that the money is going to go towards Nadava. My time, and the reason is ein mafrisha mitchila leibud, to set aside money at the point of origination, because right now we're starting from scratch. There's no longer money. There's no longer carbon. There's nothing left. So now, it's true I have to make restitution, but there's no carbon anymore. So at this point in time, in mafrisha mitchila le'ibud, I don't set aside the money originally, only so that it's going to get destroyed. And so therefore, the money is going to go towards Nadava.
And he brings
an ashram. Yeah, in other words, for the violation of Me'ilah, yeah, he brings the carbon ashram. Okay, we are up to now the final Mishnah of our Perek. Okay, I know it's pretty short, right? We just started the Perek. What's today? Today's Friday. Started the Perek on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. three dapim. Our last mission over here is going to continue the theme of this parak. The theme of this parak is Mi'il and Karbanos. Wasn't that the theme of the first parak? The answer is yes, but with a very, very basic difference. In the first parak, we talked about Karbanos that went awry. In our parak, we're talking about Karbanos that are brought correctly. And when does Mi'ila begin and when does Mi'ila get lifted when Karbanos are offered correctly? Our mission now is going to be talking about Karbanos that are offered on the Mizbech that don't have a Matir, or better stated, they themselves are the Matir. Well, a blend of both. But in other words, up until now, we were talking about Karbanos that do have a Matir. Our Mishnah is going to be describing those things that either themselves are the Matir or simply don't have a Matir. So you'll see it's a list of five items. Number one, in our Mishnah, Kometz. The Kometz, of course, is the fistful of flour that's taken off of a mincha that's going to be burned on the top of the Mizbeach. So the Kometz itself is a Matir, meaning the Kohanim can eat the remaining, the Shiraim of the mincha, only after the Kometz is offered on the top of the Mizbeach. So a Kometz Bahal Levona. And additional to that also is Levona. With every mincha, what you have is you have a fistful of Levona that is sprinkled on the top of a mincha. Now, when Kemitza is actually done, so the Levona is pushed off to the side, so that the Kometz is only done with the flour itself, the flour and oil itself, but without the Levona. Then after the Kemitza is done, you gather all the Levona, right? These are thick granules of a frankincense spice. You gather them, and both the Kometz and the Levona are burnt on the top of the Mizbech, and so therefore the Kometz and the Levona serve as a Matir. In fact, it's like a double Matir, right? Remember those discussions we had back then in Menachos, in terms of if I'm a Mefago only by the Kometz or only by the Levona, is it a Chatzi Matir? Okay. Anyway, HaKetores, moving along in the Mishnah. We're now up to the Ketores. That's, of course, the incense that's burnt daily in the base of Mikdash. So that doesn't have a Matir. In fact, I can't say the Ketores itself is a Matir, meaning it just simply is. It is burnt on the Mizbeach, period. It's burnt, by the way, on the inner Mizbeach, not the outer Mizbeach. It's a Ketores. And Minchas Kohanim. The Minchas Kohanim, anytime that a Mincha is offered by a Kohen, it is burned in its entirety on the Mizbeach. And Minchas Kohen Mashiach. Minchas Kohen Mashiach is a reference to the Mincha of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol would daily be bringing a Mincha, dividing in half. Half would be offered in the morning, half would be offered in the afternoon. This is the Mincha of the Kohen Gadol. It is totally burnt on the Mizbeach. And Minchas Nesachim. Minchas Nesachim are the libations that come in conjunction with a Karban. The Minchas Nesachim that's brought in conjunction with the Karban is flour and oil that's going to be burnt entirely on the Mizbeach, and wine that's poured down a canal, a pipe, that is also on the top of the Mizbeach, happens to be on the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. All these items, again, the commonality of these items are either they're a Matir or they don't have a Matir, one or the other. But in other words, we're not talking about the Imurim or the Basar of Kachi Kedushin, which was what we've been discussing previously. So Ma'alam Ehem Yishuhuk Tishu. So again, from our standpoint, what are we interested here in the second parak of Mi'ilah? When does Mi'ilah begin? When does Mi'ilah end? So, from the time that you're Makdashit, and Makdashit over here means Makdash Bepeh, right? That's Rashi here describing it, and we saw Rashi describe it earlier in this parak as well. So the moment that you invested with Kedusha, so verbally, so at this point in time now, it is eligible for Mi'ilah. Anyone who gets any kind of personal benefit from the item is in violation of Mi'ilah. Kachin Bekli, now once you put it into a Kli, Hukshir, so now you have given it another higher level of Kedusha Sagof, making it more Tumah sensitive. We already discussed this earlier in the parak. We're saying it again. So Hukshir Lipasal B'Tvul Yom V'Chusa Kippurim. Even if you're lighter Tumah people, meaning people that only have residual Tumah, a Tvul Yom, somebody who was Tameh and Tovled in the Mikvah and is waiting for sunset, a V'Chusa Kippurim, somebody who was Tameh, Tovled in the Mikvah, experienced Erev Shemesh, and now is just waiting to bring his Karbanos on day 8. So, if once these items are put into a Kli, it is now going to be sensitive and eligible to become Tameh, even if any of these people were to touch it. Uvelina, now that they're in the Kli, it's on the clock, meaning it has to be offered today. If it's not offered today, it's going to be disqualified. V'chayar v'lam mishum noser mishum Tameh. It is also going to be subject to noser, it's also going to be subject to Tameh. What about Pigel? And what we're going to be learning in our Mishnah for the remainder of today's daf, no, it's not going to be subject to Pigel. O Pigel ain't ba. it is not going to be subject to pickle. Why isn't it going to be subject to pickle? Right. Oh, so that's a big rule. Zaklal kol sheyesh lo matirin ein chayav lo mishum pickle. V'nos v'tamei ad sheyakruv matirin. So anything that has a matir. So anything that has a matir. What does that mean? It's basically talking about your standard carbon. Your standard carbon. Let's talk about a chatos. A chatos. So what happens with the carbon chatos? We are going to take the emor and put it on the mizbech. We're going to take the bus and give it to the kohanim to eat. All that, but only when the blood is sprinkled on the mizbech. The blood being sprinkled on the mizbech that serves as a matir. So anything that has a matir is going to be subject to pickel, noser, and tamei. But when? Only after the matir has been offered. Once the matir has been offered, now making it consumable, once it becomes consumable, now it becomes eligible for all the consumable disqualifications of pickel, noser, and tamei. V'chol she'ein lo matirin, but let's say something does not have a matir. Now, let's say, for example, in our Mishnah, we talked about the kometz. The kometz itself is a matir, but it's not limited to just the kometz. Meaning, look at the other items in our Mishnah. The ketores. The ketores does not have a matir, because the ketores is offered in full, in total, on the Mizbech HaZahav. So it doesn't have a matir. So, kevin shekiddush b'kli chayav l'mishum noser v'tamei u'pigol ein bo. So once you put into clean your mekadesh b'kli, so at this juncture now it's subject to noser and it's subject to tumah. However, pigel ein bo, it is not going to be subject to pigel, meaning pigel is just simply not an eligible disqualification for something that does not have a matir. That is a big rule. We quoted this Mishnah often throughout Zvachim and Menachos.
You don't consume
ketores. When we say pigle and we talk about consumption, meaning consumption could be either you and me consuming it or it could be the mizbeach consuming it. Okay. Now, as far as our discussion for the rest of today's daf is concerned, so let's start with our gemara on the top of the amud beis. Menan imili, how do I know this? Now, the gemara over here is going to be making its point regarding the following. There, when it comes, we are looking at two disqualifications and we're putting them side by side. We're looking at pigel and we're looking at tumah. And we're comparing these disqualifications of pigel and tumah. Now, pigel is a very serious disqualification, but so is tumah as well. Pigel, again, I know we all know this, but for anyone who's hearing pigel for the very first time, I imagine at this juncture, if we're learning me'ilah and daf yud, that doesn't include a lot of you. But pigel, when the Kohen is doing any one of the Dalet Avodos, and while doing the Dalet Avodos articulates that he's going to be enjoying the carbon chutzos mano beyond its prescribed time. So let's say it's a chatzos or an oshem where the carbon is going to be offered today, and you have today and tonight to eat the meat of the carbon. And instead, the Kohen says while shechting, or doing any one of the Dalet Avodos, that he's looking forward to eating this carbon tomorrow, so that's chutzos mano. And so therefore now, the pickle disqualification occurs to this animal, which now means that as long as you have finished and concluded all the avodas correctly, and there was no other machshava that occurred while doing this karban, so that means now that we have the pickle disqualification. Any person who were to consume the karban meat of this karban that underwent the pickle disqualification is subject to a kares penalty if he does it b'mezid. What if he does it b'shogeg? He has to bring a karban chatas. All this we learned back in Krisus, and we also discussed this extensively in Zvachim as well, Zvachim and Menachos. Anyway, that is the disqualification of pigel. What's the disqualification of tumah? Similar. Disqualification of tumah is that if somebody who is tamei were to eat karban, so that too brings about a kares penalty. And that person is going to, if he does so intentionally, subject to kares. If he does so unintentionally, he's going to have to bring a carbon chatzos himself. Okay, those are the two disqualifications that we're putting side by side, and we're looking at the two of them side by side. And the Gemara starts off, Minani Mili, how do I know this? Tanurabanan. Now, what the Gemara wants to know is that Noser and Tame, the disqualifications of Noser and Tame, are going to be chayav on every carbon, both the carbonas that have a matir and carbonas that don't have a matir. But when it comes to pigel is limited. And pigel is only for those things which have a matir, but not the thing which is a matir itself. How do I know all this? Tanu Rabban, the Gemara quotes the following brayso: Yachol ein chayav mishum tuma ela b'davar sheish lo matirin. Look, here's what I would have thought: if we were left to our own devices, using principles of kal v'chomer and logic, we would have said that the disqualification of tuma is only for something that has a matir, but not the matir itself. Why would we have said that? So Vidinuka, the Gemara says, consider the following argument. Ma pigol. Now, when it comes to pigol, think of the severity of pigol. Now, when we talk about the severity of pigol, the Gemara over here is going to look at three characteristics of the disqualification of pigol. Number one, yidia achas. How many awarenesses do you need? You only need one awareness, i.e., you need only to have learned afterwards that this was pigol. Let's say, for example, you ate the carbon meat, and you didn't know beforehand that it was pigol. You only discovered afterwards that it was pigol. That's all you need in order to bring about a carbon chatas. Number two, the carbon kavua. The carbon that you bring is a carbon kavua, meaning this is a karis penalty. If you violate it, if you eat it by accident, b'shogeg, nevertheless, you're going to be chayv a carbon chatas, a standard carbon chatas with no scholarship opportunity. In other words, it's your standard carbon chatas, period. And number three, the third characteristic, v'lo ahut b'chlalo. You know there's no exclusions whatsoever for pigol. There's no exemptions. In other words, either you violate pigol or you did not violate pigol, and there's never a time where there's any kind of dispensation that's given. So these are three characteristics as it relates to the disqualification of pigol. And meanwhile, ein chayav alav al davar sheyesh lo matirin. Now when it comes to pigol, so pigol is only limited to something which has a matir. Okay. Which means that pigol doesn't apply to kataris and it doesn't apply to the nesachim, like we already discussed back in our Mishnah. But in other words, this is the on one hand, pigol has so many harsher characteristics. On the other hand, it's only limited to something which has a matir. Fine. And by the way, the way we know this, the Gemara over here doesn't source it, but the way we know it, the Gemara in Zvachim darshaned it out, and you can see Rashi who quotes the Gemara's over there. Anyway, that's pigol. Now let's compare that with tuma. Tuma, on the other hand, tuma is much more milder relative to pigol. For example. And we're going to go over all three of these characteristics. Number one, shibishtei yediyas. In order to violate tumas mikdash, you have to have two yediyas. What does that mean, two yediyas? You have to have known beforehand you were tummy, then lapsed into unawareness, and then discovered again afterwards, after you either went into the base of mikdash or you ate karban while in your state of tuma, you have to become aware afterwards that you were tummy. So in order to properly violate tumas mikdash, there has to be yediyah on the front end, there has to be yediyah on the back end. Again, contrast that with pigol. Pigol, there only has to be yedi on the back end, not on the front end. Two, karbano olaviyorein. What about the karban when a person violates tuma? Scholarship opportunities. A person could bring a more affordable karban if his statements demand it, if his financial statements demand it. It's a karban olaviyorein. And finally, number three, hutor michlala. Do you know that a carbon can be brought in a state of tuma under certain circumstances? Meaning there are dispensations where a carbon can be brought by tuma, notably a carbon sebor, when the majority of the Jewish people are tuma, so it could be brought in a state of tuma. So you see that tuma, relative to pigol, is a much lighter disqualification. And eino din shelo yei chayv ela adav sheyesh lo matirin. So now, if pigol, which is harsher and is only limited to something which has a matir, I would have said the same thing regarding tuma. Tuma, which is a lighter disqualification for the three reasons that we just articulated, so therefore I would say that it should only be limited to something which has a matir. Tama lomar, amor leim ledorasechem, kol isha sheyikrav mikol zarechem. So the Gemara says, okay, and so if left to a kal v'chomer, that would have been our conclusion. It is not left to a kal v'chomer, but rather we have a drasha. If you open up to the in Parshas Emor to the beginning of Perchav Beis, and more aleim ledorasechem, the Gemara is quoting from the third pasuk. Kol isha sheyikrav. I'm reading now the pasuk. Kol isha sheyikrav mikol zarechem el hakadoshim asher yakdishu b'nei Yisrael l'Hashem v'tumaso alav karbon he's tamei v'nichrasa nefeshahim milfanai ani Hashem. The person's going to be cut off. Now bechol hakadoshim. Now back to Gemara. Bechol hakadoshim akasa medaber. Torah is talking about all kadoshim, meaning tuma is not limited. Tuma and the disqualification of tuma applies to all karbanos. Yachul yuchayav malam miyad. I might have thought that, okay, now that the Torah gives us an expansive package regarding the disqualification of tuma, that a person is going to be subject to kares for tuma on a karban, any kind of karban, not just the karban that is that has a matir, but even the karban itself that does not have a matir. Good. So I might have thought that when is one going to be subject to kares immediately? Tamalam Rashi Krav. So the Pasuk Asher Yikrav tells me, well, the Gemara is going to explain. Amar Rabbi Elazar, v'chiyesh nogeya shu chayav. What do you mean? Nogeya? You're going to be chayav for negiya? So ha ketzad, kol davar sheyesh lo matirin, eino chayav ad sheyakrivu matirin, until the matir is nikrav. V'chol davar sheyein lo matirin, eino chayav ad shekadesh b'kli. That in terms of when this disqualification of tumah begins to the point where you're going to be chayav kares. So if it's something that has a matir, so that's going to be when the matir is offered. If it's something that does not have a matir, like all the examples of our Mishnah, the Kometz, the Lavona, the Ketores, the Minchas Nesachim, the Minchas Kohen, the Minchas Kohen Gadol. So all these items that do not have a matir, so when does the disqualification of Tumah begin? If it doesn't have a matir, when it goes into a Kli. Once it goes into a Kli Sharis, it is at this point in time now going to be eligible for the disqualification of Tumah, for the Kares bearing punishment of Tumah, if a person Tameh goes ahead and consumes it. Give me just one second. When all said and done, what have we just learned in our Gemara? A Kavah Chomer could have been made. I mean, the Gemara is really, in the entire Gemara, the Amud Beis just made one singular point. A Kavah Chomer could have been made that would have significantly limited the disqualification of Tumah to only those things which have a matir. Why? Because pigle only applies to those things which have a matir. And we know pigle is harsher than that of tumah. So if pigle is only is limited to only those things which have a matir, I would have said the same thing by tumah. That's what we would have said had we had a kavah chomer, and the kavah chomer is very good. But the Gemara says, but the pasuk teaches us otherwise. That's the entire point of the Gemara. That only answers, by the way, half the Mishnah. Right? If you go back to the Mishnah says, do you know that when something doesn't have a matir, so it's going to be subject to... It's going to be subject to Tumah and Nosar. Okay, so the Mishnah tells us that it includes Tumah and Nosar, right? Not Pigle, because again, it doesn't have a Matir, but Tumah and Nosar. In our Gemara, so what do? We successfully explained why it is that those things that don't have a Matir are subject to Tumah. What about Nosar? Right? The Gemara didn't mention it at all. So Rashi, a couple places, Rashi says that we have Gzeir Shava connecting Tumah and Nosar. So whatever's true regarding Tumah is going to be true regarding Nosar as well. But certainly interesting that the Gemara just, you know, leaves that point totally unaddressed, even though that really is half the point the Mishnah is making. Hajjal HaChatzot, that is the end of the second parak of the Masechta. Tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem, we start the third parak of the Masechta, territory which we already covered back in Temura. We get to review tomorrow the Chamesh Chatos HaMesos, the five Chatos that are consigned for death. That comes up in tomorrow's daf. We even touched on in today's daf as well. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.